welcome listeners to this podcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can stop by the range at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine, right across from DP&L, or you can give us a call at 937-293-3914, and we'd be more than glad to discuss with you any firearms-related interests or needs that you might have. You can call us today on the radio at 457-1290. That's 457-1290. If you have a question, want to make a comment, there's lots of things in the news, and we're going to talk about some of those things as we get into the show. But first of all, I want to talk for just a few minutes with Jason Michaels, who's an on-air host here at WHIO. He was a member. He attended our First Shots class last week. And Jason, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be here.
And I just wanted you to talk a little bit about your experience. We'll start off, I know there's a lot of, with the gun, you know, the gun control issues,
right,
kind of highlighting the news and the internet these days. Just give us kind of a general overview of what prompted you to do this.
Well, it's a couple of things, actually. Number one, you know, I had never fired a handgun before. You know, I did have some experience when I was younger with handling shotguns and that sort of thing, but I'd never fired a handgun. I am in my mid-50s, and I am single, and I was kind of looking ahead. Right now, I'm fortunately in a position where I have lots of friends around me, and I don't fear for my safety in my home, but you know, when the time comes that all of those people go away and I look forward to retirement, you know, then I'm going to have a home and property that I need to protect. And so looking ahead and thinking that, you know, maybe I want to, you know, buy a gun and keep it in the house. Not God forbid that I'd ever have to use it, but it always gives you a level of confidence to know that it's there in case the big bad guy breaks in at 3 o'clock in the morning. And mm-hmm. So that was why I had a curiosity and wanted to go through that First Shots class. And it was a very enjoyable experience.
Well, tell us a little bit about your experience.
Well, first of all, I think what a lot of people need to understand is that it's not all about shooting. It's not all about, you know, it's about learning gun safety. It's about learning how to handle firearms. In fact, for the parents who were there, they even spoke for a period of time to the parents about what do you tell your child if they're in a situation where they're at a friend's house and all at once they see a gun sitting on the table. So it's I think that it's instructional, it's informative, it has something for everybody. It's, you know, contrary to what people, you know, may conjure up in their mind, this is not about turning people into rabid Second Amendment, don't take away my rights, although that is, you know, the Second Amendment is touched upon. It may not be what the media is building up in people's minds. Everything was very structured. When we went out on the range, there was a procedure to everything. There was a method by which you were told first you do this, then you do that. You had to load the magazines yourselves. You certainly walked away with a respect for the weapon itself. And then at the end of the class, of course, the opportunity to, become an associate member of the range, as well as, you know, encouragement to come back and learn more. And I think that's what people need to do if they're considering this sort of thing.
Tell us about the diversity of the students that you recall being in the class.
We had young. We had people who are like me, not so young, but, you know, there were some people that were older than me there. It was a very widely diverse group of individuals, some obviously single, some married, and everywhere in between. It ran the gamut. A lot of people had lots of different reasons why they were there. But again, I think it's very important to note that everything in the First Shots class is aimed at giving people information. It's aimed at teaching people how to use the firearms safely. And that I think is so important.
Well, there's one other aspect that we often try to include, and maybe I wasn't in your class, right. So maybe they didn't have any in your class, but most of the time people actually have fun.
Oh, well, that goes without saying. you can see the competitiveness among, for instance, the couples, the husband trying to outshoot the wife on the range. And I think in one in our class, the woman actually shot better.
Yeah. That's usually the case, by the way.
I was amazed at, first of all, I did much better than I thought I was going to do in terms of the actual shooting itself. Not perfect, no, but you know, I in no way, mean, shape, or form was I shooting wildly. I think I got like six or seven of the shots pretty much on target. I'm a little astigmatic, with a little astigmatism. So it got a little farther away. It got a little more challenging, but still, the guns were not as difficult to operate as I thought, and I was amazed at how well I did.
Great. So. You know, I want to remind our listeners that our First Shots program is designed for people like Jason and the other people that attended that class, and the age range is from literally 10 to 80 as far as people that we've had in classes, and that's the perfect jump-off point for people who want to find out a little bit about firearms. Maybe they've heard a lot of misconceptions because we know there's a whole lot of misinformation that's out there. But the focus is, like he said, it's not so much on shooting the gun as it is respect for the gun, the firearm safety, exposure and acclimation to a range environment, and all the other issues. And you walk away from there. I know right before we adjourn at the end of the evening, we have a little award ceremony.
Right.
And you remember that.
I did.
And there was that competitiveness gleaned through because some of the guys were like, well, wait a minute, my wife got seven, but I got three. What, don't I get a T-shirt also? And yeah. and they had a good time. And there's just
sure
a lot
you can
of,
buy a T-shirt.
Yeah, yeah, all right.
Yeah, yeah. But in your particular situation, you mentioned that was your start off. Do you anticipate coming back and taking additional training to get yourself up to the point where you feel comfortable?
I do, because you know I have an interest in concealed carry. I have an interest in continuing to obviously practice more. And as I said, I have an interest in eventually purchasing, a gun for my personal safety. So, yes, I certainly intend to be back. I was very happy to have that opportunity to get the associate membership, and we'll be doing that. I know awesome. I went with a family member of mine, and I know he had a good time, too. And so I'm sure we'll be back.
Good. Well, thank you for coming on the show
my
and
pleasure.
Sharing with us your experiences.
My pleasure. Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. Other information, some interesting things that occurred this last week. Obviously, the Senate moved forward with discussion of some gun control related issues. And I want to point out that I think it's been misreported the majority of the time that the Senate has passed gun control legislation. And all they really did is authorize the discussions to begin as to the various issues that have been raised in the legislation that's been proposed. And basically starting on Friday, and then I imagine they're really going to get into it on Monday, they're going to start dissecting the various provisions of that bill to see if it's something they can live with, if it's something they can present to the entire body and then ultimately pass on to the House and then onto the president for his signature, any one or combination of the issues. And I just want to alert our listeners to the fact that there's a whole lot more that has to be done. This is by no means done. And I keep pointing to the fact that several news commentators are stating that the Senate has passed gun control legislation. They've not done that. All they did is move it on to the discussion phase. And I'm going to tell you right now, and it's no secret, the majority of the issues are not going to make it out of that discussion. One of the Democratic senators last week, matter of fact, was being confronted by Chris Matthews, and Chris was trying to kind of force feed him his interpretation. And the senator said, wait a minute, just because we've decided to move forward with discussion does not in any means mean that we're going to proceed with any or all of the provisions that are being proposed. He said, a matter of fact, I think this is critical. Remember, this was a Democratic senator, and he was not one of the people involved in the presentation, but he said that I want to make this very clear, that the issues of an importance that I'm going to look at personally, he says, number one, whether or not the issues infringe on the Second Amendment. He goes, that's first and foremost. He said, then secondly, and thirdly, I'll address some of the other issues, but first and foremost is the issue of whether or not anything that we would enact here and pass on to the House is going to infringe on the Second Amendment. So I thought that was pretty telling of his ideology.
One of the other things that was reported from a couple of weeks ago was when the initial gun control legislation was heard in Senate committee, and it passed the Senate committee. And again, it was reported as though it has passed the Senate. Well, you know, that getting out of committee is kind of the first step along the process to find out, is there going to be even a bill, much less will that turn into a law? And you're absolutely right. There's an awful lot of misrepresentation going on. One of the big things that I keep hearing that bothers me tremendously is how that when they're talking about closing the so-called gun show loophole or having universal background checks, what they're talking about is saying, well, we've got to eliminate those gun show sales which don't get background checks, and those internet sales and there's no background checks. And they make it sound as though no gun show sales, none of the sales at a gun show are ever including a background check, and none of the sales that are taking place over the internet where somebody purchases a gun that they found online, that none of those are taking place with a background check. And that is completely false. Nearly every gun that's sold at a gun show is sold by dealers. There are other people out there that are not dealers that have guns and they're just hoping somebody will buy it. But that's a very small percentage of the guns that are actually sold at a show. And then there's also the internet sales, and any internet sale, anybody that buys a gun over the internet has to have that gun shipped to a federally licensed firearms dealer. And that firearms dealer does the background check at the point of transfer, not at the point of purchase, but at the point of transfer when that person takes possession of the gun that they purchased maybe a week or two before and it finally got shipped in. So there are almost 100% of the internet sales do get a background check. The only exception would be if you found a gun from somebody who was a resident of your state and you drove to them to do that as a personal sale. And then really the internet is nothing more than just the advertising means by which you found it. It's got nothing to do with the sale. And any other sales that get shipped are going to be shipped to a federally licensed firearms dealer. And before the person who bought that gun takes possession of it, they always have that FFL runs a background check.
And it's very important for us to clarify those points. And then it goes right back to the issue that not a single aspect of the proposed universal background check provisions would have stopped any, and hear me out on this,
any,
not any of the mass murders that have occurred in recent times. And that's where we just have to really look at that. And in addition, when you talk about universal background checks, they haven't defined what that means yet. That's just, it's sort of like when they said assault weapons. That's a misnomer. Universal background checks, that's who knows what that means.
Yeah.
But when you're talking
it
about...
It sounds good, though.
Yeah, it sounds good. But they haven't even begun to tackle the critical issue of how they're going to integrate mental health data into the background check. And that's the part that there's no way that they're going to be able to decide that this week. It's just a critical issue. In addition to that, the protocol for running the check, how's that going to be done? Is each individual that wants to sell a gun going to have to walk up to a person with an FFL, and then they're going to have to fill out an application, pay a fee, and then are we going to be authorized as FFLs to run that? The protocol hasn't been established yet, so there's so much work that needs to be done.
There's a whole lot more that people don't know about that than we do. We're going to take our first break for the hour, and if you'd like to be part of the show, call the studio at 457-1290. 457-1290 is the number here in the studio, and we will get you up on the board and on part of this discussion as well. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show, and right before the break, I was talking about some items in the news, and I want to direct our listeners' attention to the Police1.com survey of 15,000 police officers that was conducted over the last couple months in reference to the effectiveness of the gun control measures that are being proposed around the country. And you can go to Police1, that's and you have to spell out one, I believe, PoliceOne.com, and you can see the results of that survey in addition to the various articles that were written in conjunction to it. But I just want to give you a quick summary. First of all, I want to mention that the overwhelming majority of officers who responded to that survey were not in favor of gun control measures. As a matter of fact, I just want to point out a few of the results that came in when they asked, what effect do you think passage of the White House currently proposed legislation would have on improving officer safety? About 85% of them said they didn't think it would have any at all. 85% of the officers said that the proposals wouldn't affect officer safety at all. Then they asked another question, what effect do you think the federal ban on the manufacture and sale of some semi-automatic firearms termed assault weapons would have on reducing violent crime? And again, 91% of them thought it would have almost no effect at all. There were a couple of others that I just want to highlight. And again, you can see these results at policeone.com. And it was, do you think the federal ban on the manufacture and sale of ammunition magazines that hold more than 10 rounds would have an effect of reducing crime? 95.7% of the respondents said absolutely no. And do you think that the federal law prohibiting private non-dealer transfers of firearms between individuals would reduce violent crime? Here again, 80% of the officers said absolutely none. So just in those first four, and there's a couple others I want to mention, you can see that there was resounding support for what we're proposing, that it's not really an issue of gun control. This is about individuals and their behaviors. And they did mention on several of the other articles that more things to screen mental health patients and do other more diagnostic measures are going to have way more effect than addressing the item. You got to address the individual and the behavior rather than the item. There was another question about what would help most in preventing large-scale shootings in the public? And they said that about 30% of them said more permissive concealed carry policies for civilians, which is interesting. Roughly a third, just under a third of the officers indicated that would be very positive. Secondly, was more aggressive institutionalization for mentally ill persons, about 20% more. So between though, you've got 50%, and we've mentioned nothing about gun control. Another said more armed guards or paid security personnel in those locations. There was another 15%, so now we're up to almost 55%. Then if you add 15% more who said improved background screening to determine mental wellness of gun purchasers, you know, you're at 70% right there, and there's the key. We have not established a way to measure mental wellness, so that's going to be a critical issue.
That's going to be really tough. If people want to get that, they can go out to policeone.com, P-O-L-I-C-E-O-N-E.com, and click on the most popular tab on the front page, and then right after that is the first one is the Police One Gun Control Survey. And I will also put a link up to that on our Facebook page during the break, which, by the way, we are going to need to take a break for the news at the bottom of the hour here in just a few seconds. So when we come back, we'll talk to Craig, who is calling from St. Mary, has a question, and we'll take your calls at 457-1290. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290. News Talk Radio, WHIO. Thank you, Amy, and welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. Shooting from the Hip is brought to you by Sim Trainer, Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. And if you'd like more information about the range, you can go to our website at sim-trainer.com, sim-trainer.com. And there's our range calendar out there, our class schedule. And there's also a page for this show out there at sim-trainer.com/radio, where you'll also find a link to our Facebook page that I mentioned before the break. So you can go to facebook.com/simtrainer, or you can just go to our radio page and find it there. You'll also find a link to our podcast, and you'll find a list of all the different shows that we've done and some short notes about those, as well as be able to listen to the audio from there as well. Let's go right out to the phones, and we'll talk to Craig, who's calling from St. Mary, has a question. Craig, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Thanks for waiting.
My question is, earlier in the show, you made the comment, somebody there made the comment that at most of the gun shows, the dealers at the shows, most of them have a federal firearms license.
Yes.
I beg to differ. I go to quite a few of the shows, and one up here in West Central Ohio, a rather large show, I would guess 80% are non-licensed gun dealers. Most of them are individuals will rent a table and set up and have maybe 8 to 10 guns and buy and sell and trade during the weekend. Now, I am an NRA member, and I'm definitely pro-gun, but I just didn't want the people to think that most of them are licensed dealer from what I've seen. Maybe down at Dayton.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Around the country, I'm sure that varies, and if you look at the total number of people who have tables, and then you take away from that the total number of people who have, they're just selling ammunition and accessories. Of the people selling guns, the gun shows I've been to, the majority of them are FFLs, because the federal the federal government very strictly limits that. And if you're an individual and you're selling guns on a regular basis at gun shows, you pretty much have to have an FFL versus if you're just a person who takes a gun to a gun show and you're just going to sell it because maybe it's excess inventory or maybe you've got your fill of it, you want to trade it for something different. So if an individual is setting up at a gun show on a regular basis, then you know that's something that maybe is a totally different issue versus what we're seeing at the majority of gun shows, where if you take away the people who are selling holsters and bullets and other accessories and you limit
parts.
It down parts, and you know, let's say that almost half the tables are people selling firearms, my experience is the majority of them are federal firearms licensees.
And I'm perfectly willing to accept that that varies from show to show.
Yes.
Yeah, there's no question about that.
I bought a number of guns at this, and I really don't want to mention the show because you know what they might get in trouble. But
no, they're not going to get in trouble because I'm sure the show coordinator is paying close attention to that. But understand that we have to police ourselves to a certain degree. And if you're selling firearms and you're doing it other than for an occasional sale, then you need to have a federal firearms license. If you're doing it on a regular basis, then you're a dealer, and the federal government's going to classify you as such. Now, there are some people who
see the same people. Month after month, year after year,
okay,
usually at the same table.
How much turnover do they have in terms of firearms? Is it the same guns every time, too?
Boy, let's see. The one guy I personally know usually takes 8 to 10 guns, and every month he has 8 to 10 different guns.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so maybe, I mean, it could just be that he brought 8 to 10 out of the ones that he had and then brought different ones back. And are they all being sold each week? Or each month?
Each month, yes.
Oh, okay.
They sell them, trade them, whatever.
Well, if he's selling out of his personal collection and he's just trying to cut down on the number of guns that he has, maybe he's gone through the collecting process and decided, you know, I just don't think I need all these guns anymore, and I've got nobody to leave them to, so I might as well sell them. You know, that's a little bit different situation. But like Jeff said, if you are regularly in the purchasing and selling of firearms and you're not an FFL, you're just waiting for a visit from the ATF.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised this show hadn't been busted in, because to me, I always thought it was legal.
Well,
I don't want to go up there and sell them, but at the same token, most of the people that's doing that do not have an FFL.
Well, I think maybe at your show, that might be the case, and I don't know the circumstances, but I assure you at this show that's not the case. And shows I've been to shows in Tennessee, I've been to shows in Florida, I've heard of shows in Kentucky, and that's clearly not the case where you have people that are on a regular basis.
I'm just going by the shows.
And that might be a geographic thing, and I can't comment on that. But again, like Mark says, you're just waiting for a visit from the ATF if you're operating on that
okay.
principle. Okay.
Another question I
Go
have:
ahead.
If they have this background check, I know it's not nearly coming close to being passed yet. But what would be wrong with the idea of issuing people a card, run a background check, and issue them a card like I do when I have my FFL or my carry conceal license?
Right.
Issue them a card, and you carry that card with you. When you go to a gun show, when you pay to get in, you show them that card.
Well, again, that's a proposal that has been offered around, and the state of Illinois has a process that's similar to that, only they still have to undergo the background check each and every time. But when they're buying from individuals, a FOID is a firearm owner identification card in the state of Illinois, for example, and they have very restrictive laws on the transfer of guns. But when somebody has a FOID card, you can make a reasonable assumption, if you're going to make a person-to-person sale, that person would be authorized to have that gun. The problem is that if they get their FOID card, I don't know. I think it's every 4 years they have to renew. I'm not for sure. But if they have an eliminating crime that occurs between the time they get their FOID card and the time that they go to buy the gun, and the government hasn't caught up to them with the revocation of the FOID card and confiscation of the FOID card, there's a potential problem. But that's one issue that I'm sure they're going to talk about, because they got to figure out a way to do it. Right now, as it stands, I mean, all I have reason to believe is that if you want to sell a gun to your buddy or to a person you meet at the gun show, you're going to have to walk over to one of the federally licensed firearms dealers, and you're going to both have to share the cost of a fee for them to run that check and then give you authorization to sell the gun. So that's not been proposed yet, or at least we're not aware of it. I'm sure that somebody's thought about it, but they haven't made that public.
Well, and in some states, the concealed handgun license serves as the background check. So if you have an
question.
Right. And it's not that way in Ohio because of the way that they run the background checks for your license in Ohio. And I'm not sure exactly what all the parameters are, but in some states, they actually allow you, if you have a license to carry a concealed handgun, whatever they call it in their state, and you go to purchase a gun, you just show them that license and they write down the notes on the forms. They still end up having to fill out the form, but they don't call the NICS. They don't actually run another background check. They say, well, because the sheriff or whoever, whatever law enforcement activity is tracking you because you have a license, if something had happened and you had a disqualifying offense, well, you would have lost your license. And therefore, since you have an active license, we're able to just sell you a gun without having to do another background check. And we could do something like that in Ohio. And,
yep, that
and
would be that the would, common sense way to do it, but sometimes you know how the government is.
Right.
Lack of common sense, yeah, that from
right.
from time to time, that's we've noticed that, yeah. Craig, thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Tom, who's calling from Dayton. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Make a quick comment on your previous caller. And I've only been to a couple gun shows. I'm 75, and I have my concealed carry, and I've been around firearms since I'm 11 or 12, starting out as a youth hunting to eat food, because I had five brothers. And
there you go.
It supplemented our food, okay? But there's also the possibility, if they don't issue cards or something of that nature, that if I'm at a gun show and I want to sell a gun, I can put a sign around my neck. So I have a 1911 45 for sale. You come over, talk to me. I say, well, just meet me down the street here two blocks and would transact. So they're going to have to do a better job than just saying you have to have a background check at a gun show.
Well, along with that is a proposal that private sales that are initiated at a gun sale are going to be illegal. And I think that you're pushing the plate. If they pass legislation that says if you ran into somebody at the gun show and you told them, hey, meet me at the corner of 5th and Main and we'll do this so we're not at the gun show, you're pushing the limits of the law and you're actually committing a criminal act
if that
becomes
that, a... That's actually the basis of my argument. That goes on.
It would be pretty much unenforceable.
Outside of gun shows, it goes on outside of gun shows all over the country. That's why you have 500 and some murders in Chicago, because those are illegal transactions, and they're worrying about. They should be worried about the deaths in Detroit and Chicago, as opposed to necessarily licensing people.
I agree. It seems like
now, on to number two. They're going to ban assault weapons, or try to ban assault weapons that have more than 10 rounds, and it's kind of ironic to me since I have an M1 carbine that bandoliers and all the clips and the speed clips and everything that came with it that I bought from the government back in the 70s, right out of the armory. So they sold it to me.
Right. Yep. Well, here's the thing. That one... Those provisions have very little tread on their tires, and so they're going to basically spin and waddle in the mud because there's not much likelihood that those are going to move forward.
I just found it funny.
That's ironic. It is very ironic.
And then the last one that's been eating on me is that we hear the talk show hosts and even some of the senators talking about, well, we have to reduce the size of clips from 21 to 10. And the first thing that hits me is, what are you saying? That if we have a school shooting where 20 children are murdered, then what you're saying is that we're willing to accept that if we do a 10-shot clip, then only 11 or 12 will be murdered.
Well,
and of course they forget to understand that you can reload a magazine into the gun and have that ready to go again. And in fact, Adam Lanza had reloaded at least six times.
Exactly. I mean, so, but the very beginning of what I'm trying to say is that just what logic is there in saying, well, 10 children are okay, but 20 are...
You got to understand, there's no logic because they're relying on pure emotion here. They're relying on pure emotion.
Yeah, they're going the wrong direction. They need to go... I don't want to put people back out on Wayne Avenue, okay, in a building again, but that's where the majority... If you go back and look at these murders, the majority of them have been caused by people who have mental problems.
Absolutely.
And but they don't want
mental problems and gang activity.
Exactly. I, matter of fact,
drug-related
shooting. I went online and seen how many handgun deaths there were in the U.S. It was like 31,000, and 17 of those were suicides. So that led me to think, well, wow, maybe because we have handguns, we have a high suicide rate. So I went out and checked where we stood in the world. We're like 28.
Yeah.
They'll find a way. They will find a way.
Tom, thanks very much for calling the show.
You. Okay, bye.
We need to take our last break for the hour, but if you'd like to get in, there's still a few minutes left to do that at the end of the hour. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio, WHIO. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting From the Hip. Let's go right out to the phones, and we'll talk to Jason, who's calling from West Milton. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Last week, or the week before, you were talking about the new law that changed, or the law that changed on the concealed carry and the recertification.
Yes.
And you said something about you didn't need to be recertified for your second renewal?
That's correct. You no longer need a recertification. That was what one of the three things that changed when that law went into effect on the 27th. So you, if you are due for your second renewal and you haven't yet filed your application, then all you need to do is fill out the application, pay the fees, and go in and file the application with the sheriff, get your fingerprints and all that stuff done. But it's exactly like the first renewal was back 5 years ago.
So I would need it for my third renewal?
No, you don't. There are no more certifications required anymore from now on. So every renewal will be just like your first was.
Okay.
Great. Thanks very much for calling the show. We'll go out and talk to Rodney, who's calling from Dark County. Rodney, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're doing fine. How can we help you?
I just want to make a comment about the clips on the assault rifles. They're talking about making them where they're 10 shots or less, but what are they going to do with all the 100-round drums and the 30-round clips we already have?
Well, depending on where the laws are effective, if it's a federal law, those will become illegal maybe to purchase at a drop-dead date of whatever they establish if that passes. But again, until that passes, I don't think we have anything to worry about. There are some states that have already passed legislation limiting those magazines, and in some cases there's proposals in effect that they have to actually turn them in if and when they no longer want them. They'd have to turn them into a governmental entity, which is going to be an issue in and of itself. But as of right now, there's only proposals out there, and we don't know the language yet. We probably won't know until next week or the week after when somebody has an opportunity to listen to which provisions of the bill are being argued before the Senate. So let's just wait a week or two to see what's being said and what the specifics are before we even get into conjecture on how it's going to be enforced.
Right, exactly. But what I'm saying is there's going to still be criminals that won't turn them in, and they would still be able to commit crimes.
That's a given. None of the laws they're talking about passing right now are going to have any bearing on the criminals because the criminals don't obey the law. It's only going to affect me, you, and the rest of the law-abiding gun owners in this country who do things by the book and do it the right way.
And that's going to be the way it is going to be for practically every one of these gun control measures, because it's always the law-abiding who will follow the rules, and the criminals who don't follow the rules anyway are the ones we have to be concerned about, and they, of course, could care less what gun control laws anybody passes. Rodney, thanks very much for calling the show. We're just about ready to wrap things up here, but I do want to brag for a minute. My daughter is a senior at Wittenberg University, and she and eight others of her seniors in the art department are having a senior exhibition. It started yesterday. It runs through the 12th of May. The gallery is open at Coke Hall from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, and there's a special exhibition this afternoon from 4 to 6, the senior exhibition where the artists are going to be there. And if you're out in that area and you're interested in the art world and you'd like to see what some of the up-and-coming new artists are doing, this is going to be a great opportunity. I'm really looking forward to it. Thank you very much for being part of the show today. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting From the Hip. We'll be on with There Is a Season following this and the news at the top of the hour. Thanks for being with us. You're listening to 95.7 FM and AM 1290. News Talk Radio, WHIO.